Adam Schneider has had a very interesting career, Moons. I think you said, how many grand finals did you say?
Five grannies.
Five grand finals he played in. He's a premiership player. He joins us in the studio. He's retired now. He's nice and relaxed. Adam, thanks for coming in.
No worries, boys.
How are you, Snide?
Yeah, going well, thank you.
Now, just first off, Essendon, if they came to you and said, Adam, we want you for 12 months, what would you say?
Yeah, look, mate, I haven't even thought about it, to be honest. But, yeah, yesterday I had a couple of phone calls and it was sussing a bit out. And then I thought, you know what, if I'm going to do it, I'll probably have to go lock myself in a sauna for about 5 weeks and keep me away from any bit of food or drink. So, nah, look, mate, as I said, I haven't thought about it, but I wouldn't have thought my phone would be ringing.
How hard is it? Brian Lake talked about switching off. You know, he's had a long career. He won the premiership. The diet obviously changes. But just mentally switching off from being a professional athlete, how hard would it be to switch it back on again, I suppose?
Probably once you get in the swing of things, yeah, it'd be okay. But it's probably just the little things, like you said, the diet, just the lifestyle you live. I went on a honeymoon after the season with my wife, and it was the first time we went on a honeymoon on a holiday and didn't have to train or worry about what I ate. So I went to Italy, which didn't help the diet side of things.
But some good food over there.
Yeah, you just switch off, and to lay in bed some nights and not feel the aches and pains, it's sort of good to wake up in that sort of way. And you just go for a jog and that just because you feel like it. Mm. So it's a big change.
Snides, now that you have retired for a few months, do you sit back now and reflect and have a look at your career and proud?
Yeah, not really, to be honest. I watched a couple of games in October and that of the finals, which are on TV on Fox, which I thought were pretty good. That's when you sit back and go, you know, it's all over now. Mm. So got to be mindful of that. But I think once footy starts, that's when it'll sort of really sink in. You realise it's all gone now. But yeah, look, it's been a good journey. I really enjoyed it, and I wouldn't have changed it for the world.
You started your career at Sydney. You just say Rocket was your first coach, but he wasn't there for long.
Yeah, no, Rocket was 2001 was the first year. And the day I got there, I had a broken foot and was in a boot for 12 weeks, and then I got glandular fever 2 weeks.
You sprayed for it?
Well, I raised the bat with the skin folds 3 times in a row, so that didn't go that way. Fair to say, a young little fat boy from the country couldn't train, didn't help him. So, that was an interesting year. I went away for 3 months with glandular fever during that year, so wasn't off to the greatest start. And then Rocket, he was gone after about 12 weeks, I think it was.
And Roosie took over as interim coach. What was Roosie like as a coach?
Yeah, Roosie's very good. He was really good for me in the young days, and they really set up a really good culture up there. The players ran by Stewie Maxfield, Brett Kirk, and all the boys there, which really sort of sorted a young kid like me out and didn't just come in and think talent was going to do it. You had to do some hard work and training, all that kind of stuff. So set up a really good culture there, and obviously we got the rewards for it in 2005.
We'll talk about that period at Sydney, 2003, 2007. Would you play 98 games in the end?
Yeah, around
about. I mean, talk us about that time there. I know when we played against you guys and we talked about trying to build a culture, our whole thing was we want to be the Sydney, like a Sydney Swans. Our culture wants to be like yours. I mean, how incredible just was that time through that period?
Yeah, it was. It was huge. And we probably did the same thing when we were there. We wanted to be like Brisbane. We said, how do you want to be perceived? What do you want other clubs to think of you like? And that's what it was. We wanted to make sure every time we played a club or we were spoken about, it was in such a high, you know, respectful way and a hard way. If you're playing the Swans, it was going to be one of the toughest days out. So, as I said, it was really well ran by the players. We sort of drilled it into each other, and then we lived it, and we also trained it and pulled each other up on it. So.
The no D-head policy, was that a real thing, or was that just something that was blown up by the media?
Well, we got Hawley there, so that didn't work. Oh, Hawley a couple. So, I think it was. I was a young kid, mate, to be honest. I didn't really know too much about that kind of things. But you set up a culture, and you can bring anyone in, and you flush that out of them. So that was the aim of the culture, was to do that. You walk through the door as a young kid or a bloke who's played 250 games. You'll abide by these rules or how it is and make you a better person and a better player for the club.
You talked about Hawley. Just give us a snapshot of what Barry Hall was like around the football club and maybe outside the football club.
Yeah, Shrek. He looks like Shrek, old Hawley. Not the cutest man. He fell out of the tree definitely when he was younger. But he had a good time with Hawley. He was really good. We spent a fair bit of time off the field together, and around the club he was great to have. He was a bit of a jokester. He thought he was funny, but he wasn't.
But everyone laughed?
Yeah. A bit of intimidation.
You'd feel pretty safe out and about with him though, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you did. Mate, you do actually. Surprisingly, it really blew me away how not angry he got. You know, I thought if you go, he's recognised everywhere. You can't forget that head. But I'd never seen him get angry once the whole time he was out, and he got antagonised all the time. So he was just pretty funny and quick witty and sort of shut him up that kind of way. So, yeah, he's good fun to be around and tried to do a lot of pranks around the club. But
and as a trainer?
Yeah, very good. Yeah, really good.
I think that's what a lot of people probably won't understand about him. He's a fantastic trainer.
Yeah, hell yeah. He definitely, when he was out in the track, he was extremely good, and he knew when to switch on and off, which is what you need to do. You can't be all serious or mucking around the whole time. So when he was out there, he was one of the hardest workers, and definitely probably off the field where you didn't see him training. That was when he was at his best. He was doing his boxing and his weights and all that kind of stuff. So there's no reason he was... there's a reason why he was as good as he was.
You played in some famous games at the Sydney Swans. I want to bring up this one just for Moons, and that was 2005 in that final, the SCG against Geelong. You were down by a fair margin at three-quarter time. That was an extraordinary last quarter, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. That was definitely one you'll never forget.
What was the message at three-quarter time, if you can remember?
Shit, mate, I can't remember what I was going to say, but... I think we spoke about culture and that before. We sort of never felt out of that game. That was just the way we played it. We played in so many close games that come down to the wire. We trained it every week, and that last stoppage when Nick Davis kicked the goal, we trained that 100 times during the year, that exact stoppage, exact routine. I'd block for Davo, and then the other blokes would be setting up in certain areas. Ball would do the right tap, and it just became instinct to us. So it was just the culture we had built into us was that kind of situation. So when we got to that situation, it wasn't different or... It wasn't, familiar for blokes. So it's just a belief we had in the club, which was fantastic.
And he kicked every goal that Nick Davis had quarter, didn't he? He was
four and last, I think.
Yeah. Is it true that he called himself the difference?
Yeah, he would have for sure.
Came very happy with himself,
yeah.
Nick, didn't he?
Yeah, he's pretty good. But, mate, he's a superstar as well. So, again, he was probably one of them blokes who come into the club and from Collingwood and, wasn't the world's best trainer, but the culture sort of set him out, and I think we got the best out of him in the end.
And when you won that game, did you think we can actually win it?
No, we never thought ahead. That was another key thing for us, was to not think ahead. We had to come down and play St Kilda in a prelim, and Saints are a great team back then with all the rewalts and that coming through. So yeah, it was all about step by step, and we didn't really focus on results. It was all about the process, and
grand final day, do you remember it?
Bits of it.
05, we should talk about, yeah.
Yeah, bits of it, yeah. It is a blur, as you know, mate. I don't remember when the siren... Oh, I remember when the siren... I was on the sideline walking back and forth with Jason Ball and just was having mad anxiety because I couldn't do anything. I was just watching this, and I'm on the bench, and Jason Ball's a pretty angry man as well, so I was a bit scared of him. And the siren went, and he just grabbed me and shook me like a little rag doll. And then after that, it's a blur till about Thursday. So. obviously... what you dream of as a kid, and to me, for experience it in my third year of footy was unreal, and I thought, this is easy, this is going to happen all the time.
This is how it is.
Yeah, and I was extremely lucky. I said I'd come in the first year and played in the VFL Grand Final. We lost that to Geelong, actually, when Ablett and Kelly and all the boys were coming through, and the year after played in the prelim against Brisbane, and then towards the end of my career, I sort of didn't play in any finals, so... Yeah, extremely lucky, and as I said, I do reflect on it now when you start thinking about it.
20 past 9, Adam Schneider is in the studio, recently retired player for Sydney and St Kilda. We're just talking about the Sydney days, Adam, and you won a grand final in 2005, but a different story in 2006, although it was another cracking game, wasn't it, that grand final?
Yeah, it was. That's one I've tried not to forget, but I think it was just lucky in the end we won the 05. But... the rival we had with West Coast over them 2 years was unbelievable. Six games under 12 points they were decided by.
Yeah.
So looking back at, the footy guys probably came down and gave us one each because, if you lost two of them as a footy club, or I would have felt devastated for them, or if we lost two, same thing. So
we always talk about the ones, well, people always say, oh, you must remember the ones that you've won or that you've, all of that, but it's always the ones that you've lost, Nines, that you remember better.
Yep, 09, isn't it? Mate, I remember that pretty well. Yep.
we'll get to that in a moment. But with St Kilda, because Ross Lyon was at Sydney, so you would have had a pretty good relationship with Ross Lyon. How much did that have to do with him getting to St Kilda?
Yeah, that was a good one, that one. Rossy was very good. I didn't have a lot to do with him in Sydney. He was a midfield coach and I was a forward. But yeah, funny story, when I got traded, I was in Bali with my wife on a holiday, and I just signed a contract 2 weeks before it. So I thought,
With Sydney?
With Sydney, yeah, yep. 2 or 3 weeks before it. And I thought, oh, well, I'd like to think I'm pretty safe,
Yeah.
phone rings and, you know, they said the Saints were pretty interested in having. That was when Ross was coaching, and I said I had the right to say no at the time, and so I said no for the first 2 days, and then Rossi rang me and he rang me and just told me a couple of honest truths. He said, look, Snides, I know you like a good time and you like your food, but I think you can play footy, so we'd like you to come. And that sort of made me turn the corner a little bit in the mindset. And then Lenny Hayes rang me. Once Lenny Hayes rang me, you're in trouble. You can't say no to Lenny. So I spoke to Lenny and sat down with the girl, and I thought, you know what, let's do this. Let's challenge myself. Looked at St Kilda's list and the Rewalds, Montagnas, Del Santos, Goddards, and thought, you know what, there's going to be a huge opportunity here to put myself in, you know, uncomfortable situation for one, but also to extend my footy career, and it's probably the best decision I made.
So did Sydney at any stage say, we desperately want you to stay, or was it just, mate, it's your choice, or were they a little bit of a push out the door, was it?
Yeah, I think so, mate. Yeah, I don't really know the full story. But I was just a young kid. I think I was 24 or something like that, and come down to it, and looking back, I sort of understand that's football these days. We just come out of winning, you know, 05 and 06, being in finals, and 07 wasn't the greatest year for us. We lost the first final. So that was just where the footy club was at the time, and I looked at it as, well, I'll test myself and try and extend my career, and it worked out well.
When Ross said that to you about you like a good time and all that sort of stuff, did he basically say, look, when you come here, we want to change your lifestyle and change the way you go about it?
No, not that. He knew I was good when it, I think he... You know, I was, you know, when it mattered, I was okay. But I think it's because Rossi enjoyed a good time. That's why he knew it. So, no, not at all. I think that was the best thing about Ross. Probably one of the best coaches I had for that exact reason. He knew exactly what made each player tick. He'd treat everyone different but fair. So he knew what, you know, Milne and I would, he'd give us a spray on the phone if he had to, because we'd respond. There's other players he couldn't spray because they wouldn't respond. They'd go in the hole and he'd spray you in a meeting, but then 2 minutes later, you walk past him in the corridor and he asks us, how's your family going? How's your mum and dad? So that was probably one of the best, you know, talents he had.
What was your first perception, I guess, of the St Kilda Footy Club when you walked through the doors?
Yeah, I walked into Moorabbin, which was, you know, there was dust everywhere. And, yeah, it wasn't the greatest facility.
Were you thinking, oh, what have I done?
Yeah, I thought that. And I come down there with Stephen King and Charlie Gardner as well, and we all sat around for lunch and thought, oh, well, here we go. So same thing, young and dumb and just sort of, it was all new to me, but I know Rui sort of blew me away first conversation I had with him, how keen he was and how just to pick our brains and, you know, work out what it's going to take. So once we had that chat, it was great to hear, and we're away.
Question for Adam from Jack in Carnegie. G'day, Jack.
Hello, guys. How you going?
Good, Jack.
Adam.
Yes, mate.
I back for St Kilda, and I was watching a game when you played for Sydney. And it was either at the MCG or Etihad, I'm not too sure, but you had a free kick in the forward pocket on a sharp angle, and the St Kilda bloke had to throw the ball back to you, but for some reason you couldn't catch it. It was too far away.
Yeah, I've got little arms, mate. I'm a little bloke.
So, Adam, you ended up in the goal square and you had a grin on your face like a Cheshire cat.
Yeah.
I thought, you bugger, you've let that ball go on purpose to get the penalty. Can you remember it?
I think I do, mate. I think it was, might have been against Melbourne at the SCG, and just above my reach, I just couldn't quite get there. And the umpire wasn't looking. He turned around and saw it on the ground. So rules are rules, mate. I only got a
bye. Hey, with Ross, talk about the bubble. Everyone talks about this bubble that he had at St Kilda, and he's got it Fremantle. What was the bubble? Talk about that bubble.
Oh, look, it was just, it wasn't anything to do with the media. That was probably the biggest thing I found. It was more, as a player, you've got to put yourself in this bubble, the footy bubble, the finals bubble, what it takes. For example, everything you do, decision was revolved around this bubble. If you didn't do it, it was outside the bubble. So we didn't really speak about the bubble, but it was just, everything you did was down the hard path. So whether it was having a beer, whether it was having, you know, something that wasn't right for training, you didn't do it because that's outside the rules. So you made sure you stuck yourself in it. And I think he made a quote one day in the finals after one of the games. He goes, all right, put your family in the bin for a month and we'll get this done. And then
is that what he said?
Yeah, so you know, that's pretty, I don't think the wives or girlfriends want to hear that now. But, yeah, that's what it was. And it was just, you were so focused on what it was going to take. And I remember we sat around one day in a meeting and we had a premiership cup, the Saints one and only, and sat in the middle, and that was when we just sort of all just went, right, here we go, let's just lock everything away for, I think that was the last 12 weeks of the season, and we turned our season around and got us to the grand final.
You look at the St Kilda list at the time, and it's probably one of the better in the coach as well, one of the better lists and coaches that we'll see not to win a premiership. I mean, when you look back on it now, Snides, do you think, where do we go wrong? Where do we get let down?
Yeah, mate, you do. You're right. And you said before, you forget, you remember the ones you lost, and that looking back at the time, you don't want to get caught into that. Oh, this is the Saints, the bubbles burst. This is their time. But looking back, it really was. It was a real opportunity we sort of let slip. And 09 was a perfect example. Geelong and the Saints were easily the two best teams of the season. But I thought we probably had the edge on Geelong that year.
You were the better side that day, really.
Yeah, but you know that's footy, and that's what happens. So, I can't exactly tell you what it is. Look, we got there three times, and we didn't choke or anything on the day. It definitely had nothing to do with that. It was just you come against good teams, and that's what happens. And unfortunately, we're on the wrong side of it.
Moons has talked about the misses in 08. Can you remember the misses in 09?
Yeah, I can remember.
Do they go through your head a lot?
Yeah, they do, mate. That's about 6 months, mate. You think about it every night nearly, and you can't not. It's just you hold yourself responsible.
Even when you tell yourself, stop thinking about
it.
Bang,
you.
It comes
it's
straight back
you.
In.
Yeah.
So where were you when
I don't really want to relive this
on the cricket. But obviously you've replayed the moments over and over. Can you remember sort of what mindset you were in and where you were and all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, I can, yeah. Yeah, look, 09, I missed a couple of goals, and you make mistakes. Everyone makes mistakes. Yeah. That's fine. And sometimes you make bigger mistakes than others, and they can cost you a bit more. But that's just the way footy rolls, unfortunately, and there's probably 50 to 100 mistakes in that game, you know. So that's what happens, and you got to move on. And biggest thing I took out of it was to learn from it and make sure it didn't happen again.
That 09 grand final, I only saw it recently, Moons, and the famous toe poke and goal, that happened a long way out from the final siren. I mean, a lot of people think that was sort of the sealer and it was really late in the game, but there was still another 6 or 7 minutes. So you guys must have thought that you were still right in it.
Yeah, oh, no doubt, mate. We did for sure, but, you know, in such a tight game, goals were in that day.
Goals weren't coming that easily, were they?
Nah, so it was, I remember the last quarter, I think BJ broke his collarbone. He was running around for the last 4 minutes of the broken collarbone. I got a message to tell BJ to go third up, you know, it was on the wing, and we'll try and get it into our forward line and get a goal. And you just throw everything at it after that, and, you know, we did throw everything at it, but Geelong were just too good on the day.
2010, I mean, there's been two draws in the history of our game. I mean, just talk us through the emotion of when that siren goes and it's a draw. What do you do? What do you look at? Just look at each other and go, what are we doing? What's going on?
Yeah, that was one of the rawest feelings I've ever had. I just saw a photo of it downstairs when I walked in here. Again, I've forgotten about that one. But thanks for that, guys. But, look, that was freaky.
What happened after the game?
Yeah, that was probably the weirdest thing. Yeah. Just after the game, siren went. We all stood around. All right, what's going on now? Okay, we're next week. Right, I get your head ready for that. You couldn't really get your head ready for that, you know. Grand final week, you planned everything. You got 20 family friends. You got a function that night. You know, you're trying to just block all that out. And Rossi was pretty good. We blocked all that out. The rooms were flooded, so we couldn't go into our change rooms. So we went over the old rooms on the other side.
The southern, yeah.
Yeah, and we sat there.
So just your rooms, not the common room?
No, both rooms just randomly just flooded. So all our bags and all that there, and we sat over in the other room for an hour. We sat in the coach's room for 30 minutes, spoke. So righto, this is what's going to happen. And then he just sort of walked out. I remember that night, I went and visited my family after it, and I rang Milne on the way home. I said, what the hell just happened, you know? And he goes, nah, beautiful, mate. We've got another chance next week. We'll another crack at a grand final. And after that, we sort of changed the mindset and just going, oh, yeah, buddy, oh, let's just look at that. It's another chance to win a grand final. Yeah, we didn't win it. It was a draw. Collingwood were a great team, and they were probably better than us that year. So we turned it around and said, right, let's have another crack at it.
How was Ross? How was Ross after 09 and then after, you know, things don't go your way? What's he like in the rooms after something like this?
Yeah, he's very honest. He didn't dwell on it. He was a man who led the way. He said, put it behind you. I don't want anyone walking in the door Monday, sooking or thinking about this. We're ready to do another job next week. There's 7 more days to go in the season, and that's the way we sort of took it into the next game.
Did you feel a bit banged up, though, in that week, sort of leading into the replay?
Oh, mate, you can get yourself up for a grand final no matter how sore you are. But
because you talked to the Collingwood boys. I know they got the opportunity to walk across the road to the Lexus Centre. They got to do their recovery. Did you guys have to do a function that night?
Yeah, we didn't have to, no. Ross said no. They let the function go on, so all the supporters and all that went. But
players didn't go?
No, we just went home and recovered. And yeah, it was a good idea, I think, to sort of let it slide and sort of set yourself up for next week.
Ian's on the road has a question for Adam. G'day, Ian.
Hi, gents. Adam, I believe you've got another string to your bow and you're playing cricket at the same team as Cozzy and Aaron Sifos, and I'm just wondering how you're finding it.
Yeah, I played a charity match there for Luke's homies and his family last year with Cozzy and Matty Lloyd, also a local club. that was a bit of fun, mate. And, yeah, I might be playing this weekend. So I haven't actually played too many games yet. I had a bit of surgery at the end of the year after that charity game.
Played a lot as a junior, though, didn't you?
Yeah, I love me cricket. Yeah, I do. So I enjoyed that. And, yeah, might have a hit this weekend. So looking forward to getting back into it.
We had a we had a charity game over at Karratha over in WA. Was it Christmas time last
year? Did we play cricket, did we?
There wasn't much cricket going on.
But yeah, no, we did. Yeah, it was October, I think. That was great fun.
What were you? Are you a nuggly little batsman, or are you roll your arm over? What are you? What's your specialty?
Professional sledger, I think.
Right.
Okay. Close and gives a bit of yeah.
Let's get a Jock on the road. Hi, Jock.
Cameron, Matthew, and Adam. How are you this morning?
Hello, good. Jock.
Great to have Adam on the show. Look, Adam, I am very proud of you and your AFL career, and I think it's wonderful that we're here to acknowledge your 228-game career. You're a humble bloke. You're a lovely bloke, and I love you, mate.
G'day, Jock. How are you, champ? I appreciate the message. Now, this is Jock Reynolds, the father of fantasy sports at the moment.
Right.
I'm starting a new venture with Jock, and it's called Coach King. So it's all about fantasy sports, live fantasy sports.
Yep. So this is a plug, what Jock's just
done
there.
Yeah, I didn't know this was happening.
But, yeah, okay. Right.
So tell us about this. So what do we do on a weekend?
Yeah, look, it's a new thing. It's going to be in venue. So you go into a pub or a bar or a club and... we're going to go around and see who wants to take the product. And you go in there and you do a daily fantasy sport. So you just do the one game instead of committing for a whole year like Supercoach and that. You're just going to do a live game and there'll be prizes. And if you win this, you'll go into a $50,000 tournament at the end of the year. So go in there, the Carlton and Essendon are playing on a Thursday night or Friday night. You pick 9 players out of the 44 and you're competing against other people in the pubs. So.
Yep.
Yeah, it's
you got all the stats there and there's a prize
live,
at the end.
There'll be a live scoreboard up on the screen and so you can see who else is in the pub playing against.
Half-time,
I think the winner leading half-time will get a free jug of beer and after the game you might get a carton from the publican as well. So, look, fantasy sports at the moment is just huge. And it's just
big in the US, isn't it, this sort of stuff? Yeah,
it's ridiculous at the moment. So we're going to try it over here. It's already started over here as well. You know how big Supercoach and all that is. So yeah, look, it's a new adventure, and Jock's going to lead our way for all our media. If you don't know Jock, get on and have a look at Jock Reynolds.
Fantastic, Jock. Thank you very much for your call. Hey, back to your career and Ross Lyon. We talked about him and what a great coach and what a great influence he was on you. When he left, it was a shock for everyone in the sort of outside the club. Was it a shock for you?
Yeah, it was. It was a big shock for us as a playing group. I think we might have been away altogether, about 12 of us on a trip, and I think we got the news and we just didn't know, we didn't think it was real. And we had him for 4 or 5 years and we'd been through everything. So to have a coach like that and to go through experiences like we did, losing grand finals or drawing grand finals, it just makes it even bigger. I didn't see it coming. Now sort of stepping away from football, you understand how football works. And
were you dirty on him?
At the time, angry?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we were. We were a bit
feel
filthy,
betrayed a bit.
Filthy at the club, a little bit as well. Yeah. We didn't know the full story as a player. You never do, I don't think. Filthy at Rossi, but also realise he's got to look out for himself in the end of the day and his family and all that kind of stuff. And I think the offer was too good to turn down. And looking back again, it's probably the best thing for Ross, and it was the best thing for the footy club as well. You know, we've been under him for 5-6 years, didn't quite get the job done, and slowly sort of weren't, you know, going to be at the top of the ladder, you know, in the next few years. So we sort of had to try a different angle and, yeah.
Where will his coaching legacy stand if he doesn't get that premiership?
Oh, personally, mate, I don't think it'll change to me. Mm. He's still one of the greatest coaches I've had. And to have the record he's got, you can't just have that if you're not a good coach. You know, he hasn't got the ultimate success, but there's also some players that have played 300 games and have the ultimate success. You don't change your perception on them. So,
well, when we think about Ross Lyon, we think defensive game plan. Can't score enough. But, I mean, St Kilda, I mean, you guys are the heaviest scoring team in 09. Is he based more around the defensive side, and does he need to push the scoring?
I think the reason people think that, because they don't think it's exciting to watch, because you're not out there kicking 100 points a game. But at the end of the day, as a player, you just want to win. Doesn't matter what it takes. Fans want you to win. Doesn't matter what it takes. Defense, offense, I'm not going to buy into that, because I think in 09, Saints were probably the best to watch because of our defense. You know, we'd squash teams and
score heavily on the back of that.
Yeah, you'd hear crowds come out and just go, wow, this is amazing to watch, and it sort of get us up as players as well. So you set a game plan to win games of footy, and he did that.
What was he like in the locker room? I mean, was he Was he a ranter, a raver? I mean, just give us a bit of a snapshot of what Ross Lyon was like in the inner sanctum.
Yeah, he was funny. I didn't mean to be funny, but he was funny.
You have sayings and all that stuff.
Yeah, he's Rossisms.
One of the best, mate. We'd sit around all together and just have a chat, and we'd play a drinking game actually about it. Come up with the most.
Give us a few little Ross Lyon Lyonisms.
No, I'm not going to buy into that. I'll make a fool of myself. But yeah, as I said, he was real. We used to come into a Monday meeting, and even though we won, I think we won 18 straight 1 year, you'd still walk in with, get our headgear, put your headgear, and try and hide behind him. He was very open and would ask a lot of questions. So if you stuff that question up, you're in a lot of trouble. So young kids sitting there and just sit there shaking the whole time. But he was very good. It made you a better player and a better person.
Yeah, it's been an extraordinary career for Ross Lyon, hasn't it?
What about St Kilda right now, Snides? Where do you see their list? I mean, you've been involved in premiership lists, grand final lists. Now you've been involved in a list, up and coming list. Where is it?
Yeah, it is. I've had the bit of everything. You know, we finished bottom of the ladder 2 years ago, and I think they're on the right way. Definitely, I'm a big believer. People can say, this team's going to come, but I think really are on the right way, and still going to be a couple of years. I'm not going to come out and say they're going to win a flag or play finals this year or next, but they've got some really good young kids coming through, and Rui and Joey Montagna down there are really leading the way with the culture sort of thing, setting the example for training, and you got some superstars coming through. Jack Billings will be a superstar. I think Jack Loney's going to be a gun, and then you got, hopefully you'll fill that up in the next couple of years with some good mid-tier players. So lead the way by Armitage and Stephen in the middle this year. I think they're going to be, prove again. I think they'll win the 8-12 games. Maybe not make finals this year, but who knows?
Is Richo, we talk about coaches and what kind of philosophies they have. Just seems like this unbelievable teacher of the game, but as you said, still very honest and down the middle.
Yeah, as I said, everyone does have their different way, and Richo's way that sort of struck us was just his honesty. Nothing crude or anything like that, just straight honest, If on a Monday meeting a player didn't do what expected, he just said it, well, you've put your spot in jeopardy for next week. We'll sit down and discuss that during the week. And you didn't walk out of there hating for it. You sort of appreciated it. Okay, well, this is good, He's just honest. It's just how it is, and didn't make you look like a fool in front of other people. He was just very fair and honest. That's why I really liked it, and perfect for a younger guys coming through, I think.
We missed the coach in between there. Scott Waters was there for a short time as well. Big shoes to fill, replacing Ross. What was that period like?
Yeah, that was different. And again, there was a lot of stuff going around. Us players were all disgruntled and not happy and all that kind of stuff, but that wasn't true. It was just at a stage where the club was on its way down, so to say. So, yeah, look, it was a tough time for the club and a tough time for Scott, no doubt, as well. But that was the way it was, and yeah, it's also a learning experience for everyone, and that's just what happened.
Was it a hard experience because you have these highs, you're playing in grand finals as an older player, and you've got Nick and there's a whole bunch of players in that group, of having to go down the ladder? And was that sort of a, given the fact that you didn't get that ultimate success, was there times where you were sort of...
Oh, yeah, definitely there is. You tell yourself don't turn into the grumpy old man, coming through, you see some older players, you get a bit grumpy, and... that was sort of our motto to try and keep each other up, was don't turn into that grumpy old man, because it doesn't set the right example for the young guys coming through. And you put yourself back in their shoes when you were coming through. You couldn't think of anything worse than trying to play a game of footy with someone who's just out there to keep their spot or anything like that. So we tried to turn it into a positive, and look, we realised once we sat down and realised it's going to take a bit of work and change their mindset a little bit, it was good. You set expectations high for so many years. You still got to keep them up there.
We spoke about Hawley and his work rate on and off the field. So you played under two of the best key forwards we've seen in the last 15, 20 years, and Hawley and now Nick Riewoldt. Tell us about Roo.
Yeah, probably the best trainer I've ever seen. He's not there much these days, but that's probably the reason he's still playing. He goes to Texas for 6 months a year, just does his own show, but he comes back fitter than he does the year before. And I've spent many a time in the room with him on a bike, and he just makes you look silly the way he trains. There's exactly why he's as good as he is, because of the way he trains off the field and sets himself up. So, yeah, he's probably one of the best players off the field, I reckon, I've seen train. And then also on the field, the way he could just blow a player up.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just amazed me, yeah.
Max in West Meadows with a question. Hi, Max.
Morning, boys.
How are you?
How are you, right, Max?
Good, thanks. Adam, yeah, just I thought it was so fitting that it was your last game that you played against the Swans, and we could all cheer you off, mate. It was fantastic.
Yeah, thank you very much, Max. Appreciate that. I was a bit embarrassed by all that kind of stuff at the end of the game, and I think someone told me Moons had a bit of a dig at me for it as well. So,
no, it was Derm.
It was Derm.
Yeah, Derm just threw my name in there.
Yeah, I haven't read it, mate, but I heard about it. But look, no, that was, yeah, it was fitting. And I sat down probably halfway through the year with Richo and said, look, mate, the body's, you know, starting to get a bit sore, and the club's, well, I think we're pretty good with the young guys coming through. And again, he was honest with me, said, yep, I agree. And he sort of told me as well, that's the way we're going to go. I said, beautiful, mate. Well, can I have one more game? So he goes, yeah, no worries. So I was lucky enough to sort of choose, and I thought, against the old team, on a Sunday afternoon, I was able to have family and friends come down, and yeah, I couldn't have finished a better way, except for a grand final.
Thanks for that, Max. Marie's in Berwick. Hi, Marie.
Yeah, good morning. Yeah, just a couple of things. Coaching aspirations. Your ex-coach said you had a good footy brain, so is that on the horizon? And in spite of you saying you missed a couple of goals in finals, you were a very, very good kick over your career. What's going on with kicking these days? I watched a game that was probably only about 15 years old, and players just went back and kicked goals. I mean, are they too? Is it too much running and they're too tired? You being a good kick, do you go back believing that you're going to kick the goal, whereas others get a bit nervous, or are they too tired, or what's going on?
Yeah, good question. It's a big debate to get involved in. I think over footy's been over 100 years, there's no goal-kicking, you know, secret. It hasn't changed. People still miss goals no matter how easy they are. It might be between the head, the way you think. It might be tiredness. It's a bit of everything. And unfortunately, if I knew the answer, we'd be out there. I'd be making millions trying to stop it happening, but you just can't. It's just a mix of everything, and I think it just takes more practice. And, you know, people practice, but you still miss, so... I can't really answer that one for you and give you a proper answer.
Just in terms of the running game, though, Moons has talked about that himself, the way the game has changed over the last 5 years and the amount of running even as a forward that you have to do. How much has that changed?
Yeah, that's what I've noticed walking in the door day one compared to now. It's huge, and even just the pre-seasons. But the body stands up for it, and if you don't do it, you get out of the system. You just can't keep up. You have to. And that's what we spoke about earlier. When you retire, you switch off mentally, physically. That's the stuff you can't keep up with.
You spoke before about you watching a few games on Fox Footy, and we've spoken about the last few weeks, seeing games through the 90s, and I always say the 90s was the best footy to watch because it was end-to-end. It wasn't the defensive thing that we see today. You know, one-on-one, forwards stay at home, defenders stay with them. Seeing the game from when you started to what it is now, do you enjoy the game if you just sit back and watch it?
Not as much. I think I'm not a good footy watcher. I get too frustrated. I think the rules personally frustrate me so much. Just I find myself yelling at the rules a little bit. I can say that now, I think.
Yes.
But yeah, look, there's the 90s. I'm the same as you, mate. I love the 90s. I love watching it. It's probably because I grew up watching it, and you probably played in it, Moons, didn't you?
I did 80s. Start that one. How bad was that? Got the grey hairs to prove it.
But yeah, look, it's the game. I still love the game, so I'm going to watch it for a long time. And just to follow up on Marie's other question about coaching, I do enjoy coaching. I really took last couple of years an approach to really take some young kids under my wing and you know, test out them kind of things. And Richo was very good as well with that last year. He helped me and let me take a few things with the forwards and the small forwards and that, and sort of, you know, improve my coaching. And I've done a fair bit, and I've actually done all the courses for the coaching. So I think. I just wanted to try this new adventure first, have a year out of the game and mentally refresh, because I went straight back into the system. You don't realise what it's like to be out of it. You get sort of stuck in it. So one day I'll definitely think I'll be back coaching, and I really enjoy it.
Just one off the SMS here, and I was going to ask you about Lenny Hayes, but who is the best player that you've played with of your time with St Kilda and Sydney? And give us a little bit on Lenny. Why does everyone just love Lenny?
I don't know. I ask myself this all the time. I was like, what is it about Lenny? But, look, mate, it's what you see is what you get with Lenny. You go to war, he'd be first to put the jumper on and go to war with just the way he attacks it. And I believe he's actually underrated compared to what he's highly recommended. But I'd put him up there as probably the top three or four I've ever seen play the game. The way he could turn a game, and he just embarrassed other people. He embarrassed you the way you play, because if you didn't play like him, it wasn't good to watch. So.
Adam Schneider is with us in the studio. Adam, we've asked every other person about the Essendon thing. What's your feeling about, what was your, I suppose, immediate feeling when you heard the news that they would be rubbed out for 12 months?
Mate, I was actually devastated for the players. Got a couple of good friends there, and once I heard about it, I just didn't think it was real. I was just like, nah, they're not going to miss. And yeah, just as a player, to go through the situation they've been through for so many years. And, you know, I remember last year we played Essendon and I think we won by 80, 90, 100 points maybe. And half time, I was just going, these boys just mentally are done already. Like, just physically and mentally, just couldn't give anything more. And probably the last thing in their mind was trying to win a game of footy. So now to actually go through this now and waste another year of their career, another year of their life, I'm shattered for them. Absolutely shattered for them.
Just the team mentality. Moon's talked about this and, you know, this supplements program. Do you think if you were in that room and, you know, someone stood up and said, we're all doing this, this is what we're, you know, this is a new cutting edge program, do you think you would have raised any concerns or do you think you just would have gone along with whatever was happening?
I would have agreed. I think you put trust in your staff, you hire. I think that's what it comes down to. You'll do whatever it takes to sort of win. Not cheating. Obviously, I'd like to think, or I don't know the full, they'll explain that this is not illegal or all this kind of stuff. I'm only assuming here. But I think in a footy club environment, when you're told something, you know, the coach says jump, you say how high sort of thing, you'll do whatever it takes to win. And, you know, you're going to stand up against 40 other blokes who want to win and say no, it's going to be a tough situation. And people can say, oh, look, it's up to the player to say, you know, to make their decision. But I don't really buy into that. I think it's a footy club and that's the way it is.
It's interesting that now they've got a top up and you said that you probably wouldn't be interested in playing again. But what sort of top up players, you know, 10, they're going to look for 10 top up players and there's been a debate. Do they go for kids? Do they go for guys sort of in there?
Being in the system.
Yeah, being in the system maybe early to mid-20s that just couldn't cut it at the top level. Do you go for a few recently retired players, Adam? I mean, how would you go about it if you're recruiting these players?
Yeah, it's a unique situation, isn't it? Probably their 10 best players or 7 out of 10 best players. So yeah, you probably need the whole spine down the middle, you know, a forward, a big centre-half back, a couple of midfielders. You can't expect the young guys coming through. And I think if you're going to do it, I'd go for experience, being in the system. I think it'd be too hard and too much to bring new players in, which you've already got new players going to be in there. Bring another 10 new players in, you just won't be able to stand up to it. So I'd be looking for people who've been in the system, I'd reckon that. But at the end, they're hard to find. So you got to.
Well, as you said, you spoke about it before, and Brian Lake spoke about it yesterday. You know, once you retire, particularly I'm talking about the older guys, you just switch off, and it'd be so hard for you or Brian or James Kelly or whoever it may be. We're talking about these older guys to really switch back on and go, right, I've got 5 weeks to get myself fit. Not a chance.
Nah, it'd take a bit longer than that, especially if you're carrying a couple more. But,